Hi, thank you, Chris. Hi, welcome everyone. I'm from CDC's Arctic Investigations Program, which is our field station for infectious diseases here in Alaska, and I want to welcome all of you. I hope you're enjoying the nice, cool, and humidifying weather that we have going on here. Consistent with a long-documented health disparity, we learned that American Indians and Alaska Natives, AIAN persons, were four times more likely to die from 2009 H1N1 influenza than were persons of other races. This was an effort undertaken by a CSD working group and presented data from 12 states published in the MMWR. So we did a follow-up study on this to answer these questions. What are the risk factors for death from 2009 H1N1 influenza? And is American Indian Alaska Native racial status an independent risk factor for death, or do other factors explain the increased mortality? And this is to address a commonly held belief that's not supported by a biology or genetics that American Indians in some way are more susceptible to influenza. So a large number of agencies were involved, including these five states, CSTE, Indian Health Service, and CDC. We did a matched case control analysis where cases were H1N1 fatal cases that were lab confirmed, residents of a particular state, and had sought health care in the 15 days before death. Outpatient controls were used that were laboratory confirmed for influenza A, and we matched these on state and date of diagnosis. We did standard medical record abstraction for clinical information about the cases, but we extended this by doing interviews of case proxies that were either household members or first-degree relatives of the fatal cases, as well as telephone interviews with the control patients or their parent or guardian. And this allows us to get information on access to health care, their health-related behaviors, and their home living environment. We did a multivariate analysis using conditional logistic regression, and because some of our variables had a high rate of missing data, we did multiple imputation analysis where missing data were estimated using other factors as predictors. And we used that to create 20 additional data sets where the missing data were imputed, and then we used conditional logistic regression on each of those, and then those parameter estimates were combined to give you the data that I'll show you shortly. This table just contrasts the fatal cases and outpatient controls, and I'm highlighting the racial status. 22% of our fatal cases were American Indian or Alaska Native, as opposed to 16% of the outpatient controls. And you can see the relative contributions from each of the states. Most of the cases came from Arizona, New Mexico, and Oklahoma. So these are our multivariable results. The risk factor, the way we parameterize the variable, the matched odds ratio, and the p-value are shown in each of the columns. Age class being older age, we're more at more risk of death. Pre-existing medical conditions, increased risk of death. Delayed receipt of antiviral medications, where we compared those people who received antivirals 3 days or more after illness onset with those who received less than 2 days after illness onset. Smokers were more likely to die, and having a barrier to accessing health care, either associated with travel-related problems or a financial barrier, was also associated with increased risk of death. So to summarize, older age, pre-existing health conditions were well understood. The delayed receipt of antiviral medications, smoking, and barrier to health care could be all considered modifiable risk factors, and I've highlighted smoking and barrier to access to health care as new factors associated with flu death that had not been identified prior to this study. Of note, American Indian Alaska Native race was not associated independently with influenza mortality, although it was strongly associated with it on bivariate analysis. And so we consider this a marker for other factors, not an inherent risk factor of itself. The policy implications, this and other data from the 2009 epidemic, led to American Indians and Alaska Natives being now considered a high-risk group for influenza preparedness. That allows this group to receive higher priority for vaccine and antivirals. They were not at the time of the epidemic. The study helps us explain the increased risk for American Indian persons, and I think puts a focus back on modifiable risk factors and gets us out of the trap of labeling this as a genetic weakness. So I want to thank the many co-authors. This was a cast of 100 engaged in this activity, including four state epidemiologists, our own Joe McLaughlin from Alaska, Christy Bradley from Oklahoma, Ken Komatsu from Arizona, and Michael Landon from New Mexico. Thank you.
I like to let it beep just so people see how close they cut it. I love that. It was like a couple of you guys had like seconds to spare.
Well, the rumor is that there's an electric shock.
That's right. Exactly. All right. Well, we have a few minutes for Q&A, and we'll keep this very closely timed, so we'll get you out of here right on time. So if anybody has questions for any of our speakers, please come up to the microphones, and we'll do it just like we did the first session, and just let us know who the question is for so that person can prepare themselves by coming up to the podium.
Sure. Aizan Azam from Nevada. The question is for the first presenter on TV about Johnson County High School.
Right.
And actually, all presentations in this session were really great, the first and the second. So anyway, I have three questions, short questions. You mentioned that 10% of the people who were tested positive. Anybody was identified was active TB?
No, they were all TB infections instead of TB disease.
Great, thank you. And the second one, you used the 8 weeks cutoff for conversion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really not very certain, but I think because of the high socioeconomic class could be justified. And the last one is, what about the 15%? Is a good indicator? You said that if you will have more than 15%, like where did you come up with that? Because it could be used as a reference in future that if the school rate of conversion is 15% or higher, we will test everyone.
Yeah, we found that in previous contact investigations, it was very much a judgment call, it seemed. Some contact investigations included just those individuals who sat around the case patient. Some expanded to the entire school. Some to just the classroom. We felt, I honestly think that the 15% was probably a little arbitrary in conversations with our state TB controller, but we felt that if it exceeded that point, that there was probably more extensive contact. And I do think that the evidence of the extended number of hours that individuals spent in class with our case patient being significantly associated probably helps support that fact.
Yeah, it's kind of risky because if a case pops up after that, again, I think you really took a good risk, but it was great work. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, Don Tereshita from Los Angeles. It's a question for Aaron Murray. Hi. So I work with Calcio Young, and we work with the health officer order to mandate influenza vaccination for healthcare workers. And as part of that, we ask that all hospitals mandatorily collect and report influenza nosocomial infections. And we found that the definitions are very varying. And I was wondering, you reported a number of 15 nosocomial infections in the infants, and I was wondering what definition you used and how you collected that.
Well, I think all of these infants were infants who were never discharged from the hospital after birth. So they had no community exposure aside from, you know, people who were with them in the hospital. Almost all of them were premature infants who were hospitalized for a significant period of time, like months.
Great. Thank you for a great presentation.
Hi, Rashmi Chuk from DuPage County, Illinois. Had a question for the presenter on pneumonia in New York City. Question was, at the very end, you had mentioned potential benefit from interventions with acute care hospitals and long-term care facilities. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if you had identified or prioritized any specific recommended interventions. Thank you.
No, not yet. This was sort of our first real look into the pneumonia and influenza situation recently, and our deputy commissioner is really interested in this, and we actually have, I think, three other investigations sort of branching off this first one, so it's coming, but we haven't identified anything specific yet. Yeah.
Hi, my question is for the colleague from Kansas, Johnson County. Sorry, I'm Jonas Hines from Oregon Health Authority. My question was just if you guys had identified how the index case became infected with tuberculosis.
We did, but due to privacy, we have decided not to release that information on our case patient.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Great. Well, I don't see any more questions at the microphone. I want to thank the speakers. I love the variety. I love seeing some TB. I'm a TB controller myself, so I love seeing the TB mixed in. I've loved all the presentations and the questions. Thank you so much.